And will you edit out the most embarrassing things we say? If either of us go off on a racist tirade?
No.
You use for future blackmail purposes?
It's used as the cold open. Just gets repositioned in the beginning.
And do we? What's the policy on spoilers? Are we not supposed to spoil the thing?
I think we have to go full spoilers because
we always go full spoilers. Yeah, with these sorts of things, it's unavoidable. I'm afraid, or maybe I'm not. I fear nothing. I fear no man.
So Dusty Nova, I'm trying to figure out where. So he's like just a guy, like a crazy scientist living on the outskirts. Doing his own thing. Is that what's happening in the manga? I'm looking at volume 5 here.
Yeah.
He's not into fairies. Maybe, like, a different version of him is into fairies, because I know he cloned the shit out of himself.
Like, his characterization was very different, and then it seems like his role was different, but maybe they're like, oh, we like this character design, so he would make a great villain.
He has good facial expressions.
I'm just really upset that Edward Norton didn't end the movie eating flan.
Oh my goodness, yes. Flan is justice!
Should we use that as the opening, since we already said we're going to do spoilers?
Yep, that could work. Yes, there's nothing like a good baked flan. A good flan always clears out my mind.
A good flan always clears out the phlegm?
How? We know what's in your mind. It's small and square and flat.
Spoilers! A
series of tubes.
Okay. So do you have, like, some corny intro you always do, or, like, state, I don't know, the name of your podcast? Am I an honorary microwave laser patrol member now?
I mean, yeah, you have been. You've been on the podcast before.
Yeah, for that one, with that crazy dude with the crazy movies, including that one about a house.
Yes, exactly. So, you're among our ranks.
A movie where a man see a man about a house, is that am I hearing that correctly?
Seeing a woman about a house.
Yeah.
A group of women seeing a woman about a house.
A slightly different take on the old euphemism, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slightly different take in many ways.
But only slightly.
Anyway, this is the Mazer Patrol podcast, and I am Kevin.
And I am Benji.
And I am Josh, a.k.a. Captain Casual, flexing my casual muscle once again to state that I've only seen the live-action adaptation. I meant to go read some of the manga, but, well, I also don't prioritize some things.
I'll bet you haven't even listened to the radio drama, or read the light novels, or watched the theatrical production.
Is there actually a theatrical production?
God, I don't think any of those exist.
Okay. I would not be surprised about the others.
Well, I mean, like, there are some things where there is a random theatrical production that actually expands on the universe's lore, not in the original media, like Nier Automata, you know, back in 2017. That game actually does have a stage play that expounds on several characters' motivations that weren't explained in the game. And you're looking at it, and you're just going, why would you do this? Who's gonna? And then you're like, oh right, Yoko Taro. Don't ask questions. He's just gonna do what he's gonna do.
I mean, in fairness, Garo does that too.
But I heard there was this cyberpunk film that came out recently that was based off one of those crazy Japanese cartoons.
Oh Ghost yeah, Shell.
No, I don't think it was that. That's definitely came out, but how about that Alita Battle Angel?
Yes.
Or, Gunnam, as I refer to call it.
Well, it is what it is originally called, so it wouldn't be inaccurate.
Hyper Future Vision Gunnam, I believe, is the OVA title.
What is it with What is it with anime slash manga subtitles and having the word future in it all the time?
Well, one thing I actually discovered recently, there's a TV Tropes page. I think it's adjective, noun, proper noun. So you get things like Battle Angel Alita, or like Super Dimensional Fortress Macross, or Mobile Suit Gundam. It's like this format of naming things that's recurring. So I kind of actually appreciate that they changed it to Alita Battle Angel for the American release.
It is one of those retitlings where it sounds more Japanesey when they retitle it, you know, like how Biohazard was changed to Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
But just about everything else about the way that was handled seems very strange to me. Like, I don't understand why they just went through and haphazardly changed characters' names and location names and so on and so forth.
To what happened to the original manga, right?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, this is a series with a main character named Gally, and they changed it to Alita.
And there's a dream sequence later on, I think, actually, where in the Japanese version, her name in the dream sequence is Alita, and in the American version, her name goes back to Gally, which is kind of a funny inversion.
Yeah, that's a TV Tropes keep it foreign, maybe?
Well, anywho, I saw the movie last night, and I was pretty impressed. I guess Kevin informed me earlier that there has been other successful American live-action versions of anime, but this is the first one I've seen that I actually enjoyed. And I was really hoping that this would do well, given that I love the source material and some Superrun stuff. So how did you guys feel about it?
Yeah, no, I felt like, I mean, I've only seen really a handful of, you know, Hollywood anime adaptions, because there have been a ton, but there's been a few notable ones. And I think the thing that really stuck out to me about this movie was the fact that it felt like it actually had some real respect for the source material, rather than it being like the, oh yeah, I saw this movie, you know, I saw this movie 20 years ago, and there were some elements that I liked about it, but like there was some of that really anime-ish stuff, and we didn't really want to have that in there. That's not what we're looking for in a Hollywood movie. We got to get rid of that. Like, it really felt like it retained the tone of the original really well. And I say I haven't read the manga, but I guess I did a long time ago, so I do have a general sense of what the actual tone of the series is. I felt like the movie actually felt like it was not ashamed of being based on a manga, you know?
Yeah. Kevin and I were talking about this earlier, that it seemed almost like, I was asking the question, how do they get so much freedom? How did they let James Cameron do something so honest to the source material? That seems practically taboo. And I think part of it's that he's been sitting on this for so long, making so many other successful movies, like, what, Titanic? And
well, yeah, I think Avatar. it's mostly just that it's James Cameron. I mean, the dude has produced two of, like, the top three or at least top five grossing movies of all time. Like, people I imagine people don't question him anymore.
At this point, he's, like, accumulated a giant mountain of carte blanches and is just like, yep, I'm making this. That Robert Rodriguez guy, he can do it.
Even 20th Century Fox doesn't give this this producer notes.
Yeah.
That said, I know you said you wanted this movie to do well, but early reports are not encouraging.
They're better than it was projected to do, but
I think it's a box office success, I believe.
Oh, has it already passed into that?
I think it's made back like $350 million against like a against a $300 million production budget.
Oof.
So I think it's doing okay so far. I hope, maybe, probably. I don't know. But the reviews aren't terrible also, and I enjoyed it, so that's all that matters, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, the only reason why I care about it doing well is the fact that they teased some serious, you know, some serious sequel, you know, material, and I would be very sad to not get a follow-up on that, considering how well this was executed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still sort of in shock that it happened, because this was something that has been in the works for 20 years, and we've been hearing about for 20 years, and
just it was a joke. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I remember when Underworld came out and I saw Kate Beckinsale in that, you know, leather get up with the coat and the floofy hair. And I thought, wow, yeah, I think a live-action Battle Angel could work. And then years later, the movie Elysium from Neil Blomkamp came out, and it had the city underneath the floating city with the garbage floating down, and the main character's a cyborg. And I'm like, oh, now it's not going to work anymore. But enough time has passed since people have forgotten Elysium.
So I was looking into this, and apparently it was Guillermo del Toro who recommended to James Cameron, like, hey, man, this manga's awesome. This would have been, like, what, 2004 or something?
No, it was way earlier than that.
So this was before manga was cool. This is before, like, people adopted our nerdy culture and it became mainstream. Like, that's crazy to me that these grown men were swapping manga and thinking it was the best thing ever.
So, well, what can I say? Del Toro's awesome.
Well, James Cameron recommended Pat Labor to Del Toro, which was a direct inspiration for Pacific Rim. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But yeah, this would have been probably in the mid-90s, because it was right after Titanic that Cameron secured the rights for Battle Angel. So this was, you know, 1997. And there are the people that look at the ending of Titanic where, like, Jack is dropped off falling into the abyss, and they're like, oh, this is a lot like Hugo's death in Battle Angel. And we know that James Cameron's a big weeaboo because he wanted to make a Parasite movie in the early 90s and wound up making Terminator 2 instead.
My God.
Man, that would have been awesome. You know, again, now that I've seen this, it's like, yeah, you know what? I want that James Cameron Parasite movie now.
I'm actually pretty happy. Kevin showed me the Japanese live-action ones, and I felt like that's my definitive edition of Parasite for me. That was good enough.
Yeah. I think the manga is still my definitive edition, but I'm picky about that sort of thing.
There's very little changes between the three versions, the manga, the anime, and the live action for Parasite. But, you know, that's also the same deal with Battle Angel.
Well, yeah. With the only major thing in Parasite being the fact that, you know, the delinquents don't really look very much like delinquents anymore. Mm-hmm. Which is understandable. There was a delinquent problem in the early 90s in Japan that kind of isn't quite the same anymore. It's kind of hard to modernize that.
I remember all those, like, high school freshmen being drawn like they're 28 years old and have, like, full beards and 6'2". So, yes. Let's see. I've got a few things written down that are sort of notable differences between the source material and Alita. Like, I like what they did with the city. I guess Iron City, they called it. Which I think is a bit ironic, because it feels less irony. It's more people-focused, there's nature and stuff around, it's brighter and happier. It felt very crapsack in the source material, and it seemed like they made it a more vibrant place. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's interesting because, you know, the movie that it's always getting compared to is Ghost in the Shell. And that's a movie that undercuts the themes and tone of the source material while keeping the aesthetics very much on point. And this does the exact opposite, where, like, the aesthetics get changed around quite a lot, but it, like, keeps the spirit of it alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the characters' costumes and the setting all look very different. You know, I think it's partially that it got moved to some Central American country from the original. It's supposed to be set in Kansas City. And it's, you know, cold, everybody's wearing capes and stuff like that. And in this, it's a lot more shorts and t-shirt weather.
I'm impressed that the original creator the original author would actually know that Kansas City's quite cold.
Well, and apparently the reason it changed was that I think it was James Cameron himself was like, well, you know, if we were going to make a space elevator, it would make more sense to put it on the equator.
So one of the things I noticed was that Dr. Ido in the manga and OVA had this assistant guy called Gonzu, who's a sort of boring, grumpy white dude, and they replaced him with this, like, cool black cyborg lady. And
I wish she had the big dome thing on her head. But,
yeah.
I wish she had more lines, because it seemed like, it was kind of like, oh, well, that's an interesting character design. Like, I kind of want to know a little bit about her story. No? Okay, you're right. Let's move on with everyone else's stories.
I think she was sort of supposed to, like, a little bit offset Dr. Ido being, like, the controlling father, sort of like the more permissive maternal figure. Like, just let her be herself. House of Bones 2.
Yeah. Well, there is a prequel novel that I read. It's just called Iron City, and it goes into some of the stuff of a little bit with her, a little bit explaining how, you know, Hugo had this brother that was trying to get up to Zalem, and he got caught by the hunter warriors and killed for his crime of trying to build an air balloon or something. And
yep,
that was straight out of the manga. And then it also goes into the whole thing with Dr. Ito and Shiren and how they were exiled in the first place, which is totally not in any, it wasn't in the anime or the manga, which, you know, the movie is drawing on both, I think, in equal parts.
Yeah, can you go into detail on that? I'm curious how that, like, that struck me as strange. Like, what? Desti Nova kicked them out of paradise? Why?
So, the idea is that everyone in Zalem has to be perfect and wonderful. And if you'll remember in the movie, his daughter Alita was in a wheelchair, so he's going to make her a replacement body. But, like, that doesn't fly in Zalem, because everyone has to be perfect. So they all got exiled as a family together.
Well...
yeah, so, and I think that, you know, that explains so much more about his motivation, why he would, you know, latch on to a young girl and bring her in and make her part of his life and things like that. And it also, it enhances Shiren's character, because she was made up for the OVA, I suspect mostly because there weren't enough boobs in the source material. And,
possibly true.
Yeah, and that gives an extra layer to her as a character of, like, she came down with Ito, and then they had this tragedy that split them apart, and that's why she's working with Vector now.
Yeah, we should compare and contrast the dynamics between Alita, Shiren, and Ito between the OVA and the movie, because it's pretty interesting. Shiren was sort of like this jealous admirer slash like wannabe crush on Ito in the OVA, because Ito was the best at cybernetics, and she felt that, like, he wasn't working to his full potential by just helping cripples, and sort of wanted to, like, make the villain Grishka strong enough to kill Alita, like, prove a point, like, I'm better or whatever. And it's totally different here, because with Alita sort of as, like, a replacement daughter figure, her motivation's entirely different. I sort of liked how that played out.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think that that was a great addition, and I also think another great addition for this particular interpretation is Alita getting the full replacement body herself and not just Ito having it in a closet somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a weird little subplot of, like, is Ito murdering people to get her body in the manga? And I'm sort of glad they skipped that. That wasn't super necessary.
I mean, they sort of touch on that in the movie as well, and that, you know, it plays up the, well, is he a serial killer or isn't he?
Right, but rather than it being parts for her, I think it was just parts for his business in general, I think, right, was what they were implying there, yeah.
The funny thing is, though, he actually is a serial killer in the manga, because there's a few panels where it's like, yes, you know, I'm doing this for Alita, I'm doing this to earn money, but I also just really like killing people.
Yeah.
And this is like as he's like impaling someone's head with a rocket sledgehammer.
He's not working through the past trauma of a dead daughter or anything. He's just a crazy person.
Which,
yep. Just a crazy person seems to be a pretty common thing in the source material. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, any one of the Hunter Warriors or Desti Nova or even Alita herself.
Oh, so one thing I'm curious about, I'm wondering if they're going to call him Destiny Nova instead of Desti Nova, because they kept using the word destiny in association with him. And I don't think they've actually said Desti, did they?
No, they just called him Nova.
Okay. I think it's maybe part of the effort to make him less goofy.
Probably.
But I also do think it's cool they, like, had that little allusion to Destiny with his name. That was a nice tip of the fedora.
Go ahead.
Nova's a whole can of worms. I don't know if we want to get right into that or not.
Well, I guess... I feel like it was understandable and necessary to have a villain behind the villain, because that's a common archetype. You know, you've got Darth Vader and the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you had Vector, who was sort of the slum lord kind of boss of Iron City, and this enigmatic figure behind him. And I think you sort of needed that, otherwise might not be the best cinematic experience, even if it's not totally honest to the source material. So yeah, that's different. And they chose Desti Nova to be that mysterious figure, the power behind the throne.
Yeah, he's much more composed, at least in the brief bits that we get of him, as opposed to the, like, cackling mad scientist hobo of the,
yes,
of the original. But another addition that I think is interesting is the whole thing with him speaking through people, because it's cyberpunk, so he can just hijack somebody's body to communicate with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, that's something that's completely, as well, a creation for the movie.
Yeah, and it doesn't even make sense, like, what technology that would be. It was kind of weird. Their eyes turn blue, and it's him speaking. And I guess it's necessary to have communication between Alita and the villain. Like, it led to a really cool scene where she finally confronts him. But yeah, that was a bit odd.
Yeah, I mean, definitely setting up for sequel material.
And I hope it gets one. I'm not quite sure what the prospects are on that, but they got some cool actor to play Desti and not really have any speaking lines himself, right? So
yeah, it's Edward Norton, so...
Kind of felt like Mark Hamill at the end of whatever the second to most recent Star Wars was.
Oh, Force Awakens.
Yes. So another thing I noticed was how they dealt with Alita's sort of coming-of-age teenage girl thing. She, like, hangs out with a bunch of other teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of something that didn't happen in the manga. She, like, finds this squad of kids. And, like,
yeah,
she goes on nature walks, and she plays, she goes skating with them. Yeah, it's like they did teenage stuff.
Yeah, she walks up with a, you know, turned around baseball cap with the skateboard slung over her older shoulder, and he goes, "What's up, fellow teens?"
I'm not over 300 years old.
That's right.
Yep. And I thought they handled that pretty well. That could have been, like, forced awkwardness, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I think that phase was well done. I think the initial phase, they bit down really hard on the naivety angle, and it was like, I thought they were kind of on the edge of overdoing it there for a minute, but, you know, once she starts to, like, question some stuff, it kind of picks up speed, or not, it's maybe not the right terminology, more like I liked it better after that, I guess you would say. I mean, maybe that was kind of the angle they were going for, was sort of the sort of like insufferable naivety of essentially having the mind of a child for a couple of weeks. You know, clearly she'd get adapted fast, but you know.
The part where she just takes a bite out of an orange with a peel on and like, "Wow, this is bitter." It's like, oh my God. Stop.
I thought that was fun.
This is the most delicious thing ever.
Yeah, that only lasted for like 30 seconds. I'm okay.
Yeah, no, it didn't last very long. It really wasn't that bad. I bring it up, but I mean, I'm like desperately searching for things to say negative about the movie, because I guess I'm just a negative person. But but honestly, it was pretty good.
So I did think that, like, some of the stuff with her and Hugo felt a little bit more smaltzy. Because, I mean,
it had to develop at movie speed.
Yeah, well, I think it was making it a little bit more, you know, amenable to, like, the sort of YA audience crowd, in terms of, like, yes, their romance is totally two-sided, and it's not just her with a crush that she expects to be reciprocated.
Was it, yeah, falls in love with literally the first human who shows her any affection.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm thinking of, like, in the OVA where, like, he's on the run and she's like, "I like you," and he's like, "We can't talk about this now," and she, like, slams her fist into a wall.
"I like you." "Maybe you don't understand."
But I mean, they also were making him, like, a more stand-up guy of, like, oh no, he's a criminal, but he wants to get out of it, and
he wants to be a good guy.
And he's only wanted because he got framed for a crime.
Can we talk about the framing? Because that's, like, the biggest plot hole for me. That he's like, you can't, you know, kill me. I haven't killed anyone yet. I'm not a murderer. And then Zapan just cuts off a guy's head next to him and is like, you're a murderer now. It's like, you just literally murdered a man yourself with your signature weapon. And like half an hour later, the guy has like a murder warrant out for him. How did that happen? Like, how? Who did that? Why?
I guess forensics are just like, listen to what Sapan says.
Why would a hunter killer ever have, you know, is it hunter killer?
Hunter warrior.
Yeah, why would a hunter warrior ever lie? I mean, they have no reason to lie, right? Ever? They're bounty hunters, but they have no reason to lie.
Man, can I say I love Zapan's design? Like, when his back had the, whatever, Incan or something, like, cyberpunk design on it, and that was the coolest thing ever.
That was pretty darn cool.
Like, I'm glad they took so many shots of him turning around or, like, walking away and showing his back, because that was so badass. Yeah.
Somebody spent a lot of time modeling that back.
Yep.
I like him a lot more in the source material, just because, like, his whole arc is just really dang tragic of going from, like, yeah, he gets messed up in the bar, and then he's a little bit annoyed about that, but it's really because, like, Hugo tries to mug him of his spine that he goes after the kid. It's like, you know what? I would be upset too if somebody tried to take my spine.
Yep. I felt like they picked an actor with like a face and an accent and like a I want to punch you in the face attitude. They were definitely going for that, like the whole pretty boy thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because she keeps making comments about how he's working on his face and things mm-hmm. like that. So, yeah, Ed Skrein, I think, is the fellow.
That sounds correct. So another big difference I noticed was how Vector, I guess, was out to get Alita because Destiny Nova told him to.
Yeah.
So in the manga, I guess Vector was more of just an opportunistic leader. And yeah, he was in on like the organ trade and all that stuff, but he didn't have any grudge against Alita. And here he sort of was complicit and was leading the factory against Alita. I'm sort of surprised he didn't just put a bounty out on her. That seems like something he could and would do.
It would have been a lot easier than what they ended up doing.
Yes.
Well, yeah, we're gonna try and kill her in a motorboat. Yeah.
Yeah, like, just put some random hunter warriors in roller skates and have them kill her. It's fine. Although I guess at the point where she has her sword and has her new body, not much on the surface could have stopped her.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was sort of funny that they're like, here's this newcomer, Alita, and I mean, I know you don't recognize the other guys in the rink right now, but don't worry about it.
They're a mixture
totally
of...
not mercenaries.
Yeah, hardened criminals and mercs.
Also, like, that just reminded me of the one, like, offhand comment that is made, because quite clearly what happened... in my mind, is that, you know, after she gets the new body and it reshapes slightly, and I'm sure they, like, probably went through, like, a test audience, like, so did anybody notice that, you know, her proportions changed slightly? The, like, trying to not sound creepy about it, and, like, everyone's like, no? It's like, alright, we need a throwaway line. We need a throwaway line to tell the audience that happened. And it's like, did you really, though? You know, did you actually...
You know? I mean, there are so many people on the internet complaining about, like, oh, her, why is our female lead so sexualized? It's like, because it's a human body.
Yeah.
That's what human bodies are shaped like.
No.
Oh, man. I sort of actually was looking at the manga, and she had this, like, baggy sweatpants aesthetic going on for the first few volumes, which I really liked. And I guess I would have liked to see that, but what they end up with is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, in general, all of the costume designs I like more in the manga, but, you know, it is what it is.
We can also talk about the inclusion of Motorball, because that was a little bit of a reordering of stuff from the manga, because the Motorball arc comes after the... boyfriend falls off a tube arc.
Well, that's one of the things that I like is that they remix everything in a way so it doesn't just feel like, all right, we meet girl, now she's a hunter warrior and fights a big cyborg dude. Now she meets a boy that she likes. Up, he's dead. Oh, now she's playing motorball. Up, now she's fighting with the other hunter warrior guy. Like in the manga, it's very much each volume is its own sort of self-contained story. And you get a little bit of that in the OVA, but the OVA also mixes things up a little bit to, you know, introduce Hyogo earlier and whatnot. And I think that is just a lot more natural for a movie, you know? So they pull in bits from across the whole thing and mix it up so that it feels more organic than, okay, this is the episode where this happens, this is the episode where that happens.
Yep.
And then the other thing is you know, that allows them to end on the big emotional punch, which I think is part of why the OVAs really cover the first two volumes of the manga, which I'm going to be honest, I think those are probably the strongest volumes, but they're, all of the motorball stuff comes in volumes 3 and 4, and that's a strong, like a lot of people latch onto it. It wasn't really my particular favorite thing, but I can understand why they want to take that element because it is a huge aspect of the original story. I mean, with a 9-volume series, if you have 2 volumes dedicated to something, like you're gonna have a set piece of it if you're doing a live action movie and you're not sure if you're going to be able to do another one.
And it's also pretty spectacular as a thing that they could show on a big screen. And I guess this had a 3D IMAX version, right?
Oh yeah.
So that, I think it needed to have all those explosions and fast moving things. That's an important ingredient in action movies.
That's also true. Especially with, I mean, they do a little bit with the martial arts, but I mean, this is a whole different style of action sequence, and they, you know, they invented a whole part earlier in the movie where she's playing it in the street just to set it up for later, which is nice, so it doesn't just feel like it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, they fit that in nicely, because it also helped develop their relationship.
Yep.
What else? Oh yeah, so one thing I liked was that there were very similar scenes between the manga, the OVA, and the anime, like some very like shot-for-shot identical scenes. One thing I was really happy to see in the trailer is where she like dips her fingers in a pool of blood and gives herself the eye markings beneath her eyes. And that's sort of iconic because she just has these like cool symbols under her eyes. And I love to see that. That was like a signal for me, like, don't worry, we're doing this right. We love the manga. You're going to love this. How did you guys feel about those sort of parallel scenes?
I like that. And I mean, that's one of many things that reinforces that, okay, this is taking from the anime first and the manga second, because that's exactly how it goes down in the anime, is that the guy comes in and he kills a dog, which kudos to them for being able to kill a dog in a PG-13 American movie.
It was like a scruffy old dog. It wasn't like a cute one.
Oof.
Send your hate mail too.
But a couple of other scenes I noticed, when Hugo fell off the tube, that mm-hmm. scene was like shot for shot. At the very start, when Ido is like walking through the scrap heap, he like pulls an eyeball out of an abandoned cybernetic skull and like puts it in his pouch, and then finds Lita's body. Like those were all straight from it. I guess, yeah, it's awesome. Like why reinvent these scenes if the original creator already did them right?
Yeah. I've seen it compared to like Marvel movies, which I think Marvel movies actually tend to reinvent things a little bit more, but I mean that's because you're compressing way more material. But it's definitely like the reason why Marvel movies are successful is because you get people that know the material to bring the elements together for it, as opposed to, you know, something like, say, Dragon Ball Evolution, where you get the feeling that nobody really cared. You know?
Yep.
Or you have the people that are like, this is going to be wholly my take and screw the original version, which for some franchises can work, but I think you have to have a certain saturation point of content before you do that. So with this, because you have basically 2 versions existing, you have a manga and you have an anime that have slight differences between them, I like that what they did with it was they created a synthesis of that for the movie that has its own set of slight differences, but the standard deviation doesn't really change.
I see what you mean. Yeah, that's totally true. So, do you think they set up well for a sequel?
I'm not really sure what they could do with it. I mean, there are definitely elements that are dropped throughout this. You know, Jashigan shows up for a second. He's a major character in the manga. He's like the motorball senpai, and he's a great martial artist that knows a different martial arts technique, and he and Alita have a magical super-powered arm wrestling match.
Yeah, and they have this rivalry, and he's like one of the people who can just straight up beat her. And he gives her a lot of character development in the time after she's sort of mopey because her boyfriend fell off a tube. I'll never stop referring to it that way, by the way.
Yes. And they're setting up Desti Nova, but again, he's a completely different sort of character, and he seems like he's functioning in a different role. And they're definitely also setting up an antagonism between Alita and Zalem that wasn't really that strong at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they intend to continue following the manga as closely, because what they did with this movie was they drew on stuff that was in the anime, which makes some changes, and I think arguably for the better. However, there's no more anime.
Yeah, I'm trying to fit in my head, like, how much, based on how they've directed themselves towards a sequel, can they jam some of the manga in there? How will that work? Because the Desti Nova that Alita later encounters and opposes lives outside Iron City and doesn't initially live in Zalem. So that's, what I guess, most of the rest of the manga before she gets to actually go up to Zalem. So I'm a little bit confused what they're going to do.
Well, there's the whole like train robbery and her going out and being a soldier for a remote control faction up on Zalem, and her meeting up with a guy named Figure, which I could see them going with some of that stuff.
I'm
but it also
about...
feels like completely in a different direction from what they've been setting up so far. And there's also a key thing that fans of the manga noticed right away in terms of the secret of Zalem and how this movie undercuts it.
Yeah, yeah. Hang on, are you referring to what's in their head?
Yes, exactly.
Else? Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why we're beating around the bush, because we started with spoilers right off the bat. So, yeah, if anyone has been listening this far and has not encountered anything Battle Angel, I'm sorry. This must be a very confusing episode.
That's all right. We're not here to pander to casuals. Just pause this right now and go torrent. Go purchase from your nearest bookstore. Go to Fly to Japan and learn Japanese. Anyway, go read the manga.
It's free on Kindle. I'm just kidding, on Kindle.
Is it actually?
Yes.
Currently, yes. Get there right now. If you're listening to this, it's already too late. Yeah.
So.
And the OVA is up on YouTube because ADV isn't going to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's believable. But, so, where it leaves off is she's playing Air Gear, and she's angry at the magic flying sky jerk face in his castle. So, I guess, what would the second movie look like? I hope it would start with an arc with her overcoming how pissed off and angry she is by doing some rollerball and maybe having some character development alongside what's his face? Would you call the spinny arms rollerball guy?
Jashigan?
Yeah, him. And then I guess she would need to make some new friends, because you always got to have that that Nakama. You know, that's important.
Well, so this movie, one of Hugo's crew who didn't get cut in half was named Kiyomi, and Kiyomi is a major character in the manga. She's actually first introduced in the bar as a baby, and then, you know, as the series progresses over the 10 or so volumes, she grows up and becomes a reporter and then joins up with some terrorists. So she has an interesting storyline, but they could keep her around for some of that stuff. I don't know, you know, if that actress is signed on for further things. There's, I mean, the question with a sequel is always going to be, will it take them another 20 years to make it?
Yeah, I hope not.
I would think probably not. The thing I'm actually more concerned about is if you got, if we end up with like a Pacific Rim situation where it's like, oh yeah, we made you a sequel. We don't really have anything from the original. It's kind of watered down and not nearly as good. But hey, you got a sequel that just stopped complaining.
That would be unfortunate.
I mean, would we be happy if it ended here? Do we need a sequel? Is it worth the risk? Will they handle it right? We need to decide these things as true fans. It's the powers in our hands.
That's right.
I think time and the Chinese box office will tell.
Yeah, what's up with China? Like, did they make Pacific Rim 2 just for China for some reason?
Yes.
Why?
Because Pacific Rim made all of its money in China.
I thought it didn't make that much money in China.
I mean, it didn't make that much money overall, but the money it made in China.
What? Okay. This is news to me, but I guess that's cool.
Also, the company that produces Pacific Rim was bought by a Chinese conglomerate, so that's...
Oof.
That's why you get movies like Great Wall coming out of them, where they're like, here, use our Chinese actors for your American blockbuster movie.
Was that the one that had Mission Impossible guy? Or I think it was something else.
Damon?
Maybe? I'm not gonna think about that. Aren't there dinosaurs on one side of the wall?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, I'm not gonna think about it.
But yeah, like, so I had a friend that had not encountered anything Battle Angel before, which I guess is sort of like you, Josh, right? So
yeah, I was vaguely aware of it.
So I was trying to explain how, like, okay, this is the first third of the original portion of the manga, and I actually haven't read beyond that. But Benji, you can talk later about the sequel mangas or whatever.
It's crazy,
and like it gets crazy before that. I mean, let's be real here. The entirety of the manga is crazy in places. I mean, the way that she first meets Hugo in the manga is that she's fighting a werewolf, which, I guess that just didn't make it into any adaptation.
They'll introduce vampires in the later arcs, so it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay, that makes it better. But yeah, just talking about, like, okay, so Destiny Nova has a son. His son has multiple personality disorder, but he doesn't know that he has multiple personality disorder. And the one personality that has a crush on Alita also has ESP. So he learns from reading Alita's mind that he has multiple personality disorder. And his other personality is a giant robot samurai that's a leader of a resistance cell.
And they have a giant rail car with a gun on it that they plan to use to, what, destroy Teferi's or something? Zalem or something?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, can they adapt this? Is this adaptable? I really can't tell.
I think they need to diverge a bit. Especially since they've characterized Destiny Nova rather differently, too. Because you were saying that he's a bit of a kooky character. Not necessarily a villain the whole time.
Yeah.
Rest of the manga, whereas here he needs to die in the next movie, or they need to like give him some serious setbacks. Like, he cannot just we've seen him kick the puppy in a few different ways already, and Alita will have to take him out eventually.
Yeah, unless as you were saying, they have multiple clones of him running around, in which case one can be the kooky, like, turns into a guy with a flower coming out of his skull at the end.
Yes,
like random crazy homeless person, and then another one can get killed off on the top of this floating city platform. But I mean, he's also a character that gets killed off a bunch of times in the manga and just keeps coming back because nanomachines. So,
son,
and they could also do more with flashbacks. They could start pulling in some of, like, who was Alita before, what was her organization about, what was her motivation, what happened to her friends. They could go in that direction, because I don't think they flesh that out very much in the manga. I mean, they're currently fleshing it out, but, like, when they were writing this thing in the early 90s...
Yeah.
It was pretty vague.
Because we had a couple of flashbacks with Michelle Rodriguez's character.
Yeah.
Who was also, you know, a CGI big-eyed monstrosity. Is that something we should talk about? Is all of the controversy with the rendering of the actress's face?
Yeah. There's some goofy big eyes. I choose to see past that. But how do you feel?
It's not the decision that I would have made, but it didn't alienate me as much as I was expecting it to. So just watching the first trailer is like, I was like, huh, well, that's a strange choice. And I can sort of understand, like, okay, well, a character in the anime has big eyes, but it's not because she's a robot. Like, everybody has weird character designs in that.
Yep.
She's actually one of the better proportioned human beings in the manga. So the decision to render her as a Uncanny Valley figure like that is, you know, I can understand why they would have done that. And it seems like that was James Cameron's like grand plan going way back, because
yeah, that's true.
I mean, Avatar sort of does the very similar thing where you have entirely CGI characters again with huge eyes, and that worked very well for him there.
Big anime eyes.
Which fun fact, when he was actually doing casting for Avatar, he advertised it as a casting call for Battle Angel. So
very rude.
Some people were
extremely rude.
Very
rude. What I was gonna say is, yeah, my feeling about the eyes thing is that when I first saw it in the trailer, I was like, yep, this is gonna be one of those anime movies. It's gonna be one of those bad ones. I can tell already. This movie is gonna be terrible. when it actually got down to the movie, I honestly didn't even notice it. I noticed it more in the trailer, and I guess once that shock wore off, I went and sat down the movie and I didn't notice it at all.
Well, I think they reworked it, which is part of why the movie got pushed back 6 months, is that they released that first trailer, everyone was like, holy shit, her eyes, and then the movie got pushed back 6 months, and then they released a new trailer later where they changed the CGI a little bit. So I'm wondering how much was just re-rendering in that additional delay. Although, you know, Battle Angel movie, delay is to be expected, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's the fact that it even...
Yeah, I've been waiting for 20 years. I can wait 10 months more.
We were joking about how we'd get into the theater and sit down, and it would start playing, and it would be like, hey, sorry, guys. Actually, it's delayed another year.
You know what happened? When I went to the theater, they started playing The Untouchables, and then came into the theater, apologized, gave us free tickets, and put on the right movie. So I did get a 15-minute delay.
Wow, that's amazing.
How appropriate.
I'll just treat it as a really in-depth trailer for Untouchables. Well, let's see. My feelings about her eyes. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think the idea was to make her, like, doll-like.
Yeah. It seems like a superficial anime type of thing, but there's not really much else like that in the movie to reinforce that idea. You know, if they were constantly doing, like, big comical sweat drops or things like that, then I would, you know, have other feelings.
And you talk about that. They did change sort of the humor. Some of the things that were goofy in the OVA and the manga were not goofy in Alita. Like, the a lot of the hunters, I remember it being more silly background characters. Parts of the factory were goofy, like that sort of column-like dude with a face on it who gives her hunter rank. He was originally a comical character. So they sort of juggled that around, and I think that worked out well.
I do like that they kept the stupid, you know, pillar-shaped face as the administrator there, because a lot of the like, really goofy robotics aesthetics, they did scale way back, and to an extent I feel like you lose something with that. You know, it's just like all of the costume changes where, you know, you go from wearing a leather jumpsuit with a trench coat to, you know, a pink t-shirt and jeans. But yeah. That was definitely one where that pillar popped up and started talking, like, ah, yes, they got that one right. So
mm-hmm. I'm just happy they kept Ida with his trench coat and hat.
Yeah.
That made me happy.
It was an important detail.
Also, can we talk about one thing that surprised me is I was originally disappointed when I was buying my ticket and I noticed, oh, it's PG-13. But then I saw the movie and I was like, how was that PG-13?
Nobody said swears.
I think there was one F-bomb dropped.
Well, that's what you're allowed to do in a PG-13 movie. So they use it very economically. And the
there's a TV Tropes page for that. Precision F-strike.
Yes. It's, you know, Grishka's like, I'll wear you as a necklace and you can beg for mercy. And she punches him in the eye and says, fuck your mercy.
Wasn't that, like, wearing you as a pendant thing a line from the original manga, too? I seem to remember, like, that was, like, a pretty awesome, creepy thing for a villain to say.
I believe it. It's been a while since I've read the manga. And by a while, I mean, you know, maybe a month. But...
I had like, my original high school anime club mentor friend was the one who got me into this and was like, Battle Angel Alita is my waifu! I'm like, what the fuck's a waifu? You can have them too! Do I want them? Yes! More than one? No! Anywho.
Yeah, I think it was probably middle school when I first read it, but it was a case where I didn't own those volumes myself until probably college.
I seem to remember manga being easier to find online than it is now. Have you guys noticed that? Maybe it's just that it's more available. They've brought more of it over legally, such that there aren't as many fan subs.
Yeah, I mean, they're spending more time wiping those out.
Yeah. I mean, Battle Angel was one that it's always been somewhat available. There was a good gap. Because it was initially released by Viz, and Viz are the ones that made the strange naming decisions, you know, changing Hugo to Hugo, and Galley to Alita, and Zalem to Faris, and whatever. And
yeah.
So they put it all out way back when. I think they started in 91 or 92, like right after it started publication in Japan, basically.
Nice.
And Those were the editions that were around for, I think, most of the 90s. But then eventually that license must have expired because it's been reissued recently by Kodansha. So, yeah, there was like a gray period in there where it was out of print. And I'm sure that would have been when it would have, you know, the Viz versions scanned online would have probably circulated quite a bit because you couldn't find them in bookstores. Which those Kodansha editions, they're nice, they're big, they're glossy paper, all of the stuff that was originally in color has been colorized, they have additional notes and all that, but they are expensive, so be prepared to, you know, drop $130 or something if you're going to be wanting to read it all.
Or visit your local half-price books and acquire your discounted copies of Battle Angel Alita Last Order Omnibus, that like I did.
Oh.
That takes up, like, 18 inches of my shelf. They're pretty thick.
Well, Last Order goes on forever.
It does. So that's another thing. We talked about how this could continue. So Last Order is, I guess, the arc that comes next. And it's kind of weird. I feel like he could have just started a new manga rather than continuing it on in a completely different setting with characters doing completely different things. So... they get to Teferi's by the end of Battle Angel Alita, and Last Order is like, what if we had an interplanetary battle royale on a space station? And let's, like, forget the vast majority of the cast we left on Earth. Like, Alita's boyfriend, her mentors, her father figure, all that stuff. Just forget that. Space fighting. Look at all these cool people in space fighting. Look at space karate. This guy punches suns. So it's one of those weird cases where I feel like it actually regressed. Battle Angel Alita was a seinen manga, which means it's targeted towards more adult grown-up demographics, and Last Order definitely felt more shonen, and it felt like she unlearned a lot of her morality lessons that, you know, like, right and wrong, what it means to be a warrior, etc., etc. So I almost don't want to see it go in that direction, and it's, I guess for me, a challenge of, can they wrap this up before it gets too far towards that, or how can they avoid going off that cliff? I'm curious to see.
I imagine that they probably will, just because it would be tremendously expensive to keep it going in that many sequels.
Yeah,
but I agree. I read a little bit of Last Order when it started coming out in the States, and I just stopped. And I think that there are a number of factors behind that. The big one is that the gap between the end of the original series and the start of Last Order was longer than the entirety of the time that the original series ran for. So, you know, even though that's not as much of a deal breaker nowadays of like, oh, there's 5 years in between these things. It just felt like a long time in the moment. And, you know, his art style had evolved, and the original series it feels like a complete cohesive narrative. And like you said, things regress when it starts over and you find out like, oh yeah, the ending to the original, it didn't work that way. And say what you will about the ending to the original, where she runs up into space and then turns into a plant.
Yeah. That's a thing.
it works in the context that it exists in. So yeah, it's one that I didn't really get into Last Order, and because of that I also didn't get into, is it Mars Chronicle, the more recent one?
Mars Chronicle is the more recent one. That's a whole flashback series. That's more tying in with what we saw in the flashbacks in, actually, Alita Battle Angel, where she's hanging out with her elite squad of Mars buddies fighting dudes, and it's how she goes from being a, like, sad war orphan child to something significantly more badass.
I mean, that's all material that I could see them drawing on for a movie, especially since we got a handful of flashbacks. But,
well, one thing I wonder is, I know that, was it for some reason this got more popular in the U.S. than it was in Japan? Is that the case? I feel like you mentioned that once. Or was it just that it's more saturated here, some publisher decided to print more copies of it here? Is this going to make it more popular in Japan? Can we hope for, like, maybe an anime?
I think that we could. So I think the word on the street is that part of the reason why there hasn't been any new anime is because the rights have been tied up for 20 years.
I see.
I wonder how much Cameron's people have been talking with the Japanese side, because usually what Japan does is synergistically, they will release an anime at the same time that they release a live action movie. And you can see that with Parasite, with Death Note, with Attack on Titan, in order for both things to promote one another. But maybe they just didn't think that through. But yeah, if this is a big enough success in Japan, maybe we could get a new anime out of it. I don't think, like, the claim that, like, oh, that I don't think the only reason we haven't gotten more anime is because the rights have been tied up, because the rights were tied up, like, those OVAs came out in 1992, 1993, something like that.
Yeah, 93 sounds right.
Yeah, and then so they did the first two, and then they stopped. And it wasn't until 97, 98 when Cameron actually got the rights. So there was a window, even after the manga completed, that they could have done more with it if they had really seen the need to. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets adapted into OVAs that go for two episodes, and then it's just like, this is a promotion, go check out the manga instead. But with no more manga coming out, then it's always been like a lukewarm brand in Japan. So it's not one of the ones that you see, you know, tons of merchandise or the copies all over in bookstores.
I find that sort of hard to believe, given that it's beautiful and that it's been going on for so long. I mean, man, they should love it now by this point.
I mean, Mitsuru Adachi's been making manga for decades, but it's all been the same crap and nobody cares about it. But Shonen Sunday keeps running it. I had to get one Adachi dunk in there.
Hey, this is Adachi. That was a home run.
If that's true. It's always baseball, isn't it?
Yes.
I say that as somebody who really enjoys watching baseball too. That man does a disservice to the game. Anyway,
But yeah, I mean, so there are a lot of series that, even though they, even though they don't have an anime adaptation, they seem to have like a cult following, and you know, I could go into a Mandarake, you know, back in the, I don't know, 2012 or something, and see plenty of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure stuff.
I was going to mention that, because that also had an OVA then got popular recently.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's entirely thanks to the TV series.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting, too. Perhaps a discussion for another day, but I'd be interested at some point in digging into, you know, why did it take so long for, you know, for somebody to attempt to make an anime for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure again? I mean, it took till 2014. I know that there was an attempt at Phantom Blood way, way back in the day.
That's been suppressed.
Well, the weird thing is, for JoJo, it's the old stuff that's popular again. Like, they haven't reached the new stuff with the anime. Like, there are being, like, whatever, they're in the Wild West now, in an alternate universe or something. Like, that hasn't...
Oh no, they're not even in the Wild West anymore. They're in the it's part four, but it's a different universe part of this story right now in the manga.
Okay. Well, anyway, that. So, yeah, I think Alita deserves another turn.
That should happen. I think it's funny though, because I do think that some of its popularity in the States, at least initially, was just, you know, it was sort of that quintessential, you know, manga entertainment release with, you know, these aren't your dad's cartoons. Like, here's a crazy cyborg chick chopping people in half with whatever, and kicking people's heads off and getting torn to shreds and rebuilt. You aren't going to see that in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Just like M.D. Geist.
So there's definitely a part of me that still dreams of that live action Battle Angel Alita that's exactly like the OVA, where, you know, all of the cyborgs are, you know, this got a little gruesome, but I want to see red blood, not blue blood, and I want to see a dog get cut in half because I'm fundamentally damaged somehow.
On screen rather than, yeah, off, yes. Wide off screen.
Yep.
You want to see somebody grab some dude's head and like squish it so hard that like the brain explodes out between the fingers, and yeah, no, I get it, man. They don't make anime like that anymore.
and floofy hair.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Her hair is important.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, because Alita had like this, her hair had a life of its own. And also her lips, I think. They like kept referring to her as octopus lips for so much of the manga.
That's what they should have enhanced with the CGI, not the eyes.
Oh, that would have made people much angrier.
Only her mouth was cast by Angelina Jolie.
it's like the annoying orange, but like done like with a high budget and Angelina Jolie's lips, yes.
I'm thinking of like Henry Cavill in Justice League.
Was that the one where it was a Justice League or they CG'd out his mustache?
Yes.
Gosh. Yes. That was
Why didn't he shave? What the hell?
He had a mustache in Mission Impossible. It's like, oh no, I'm still filming Mission Impossible. I couldn't possibly wear a fake mustache in that movie. You're gonna just have to spend millions of dollars CGing out this mustache instead.
Oh, wow, you put it like that, it sounds pretty unreasonable. Yeah.
In conclusion, Battle Angel Alita is the best movie ever, and everyone should have big eyes.
Right. The only mistake that they made is they didn't give more people big eyes.
Actually, okay, so do you guys know, there's a little known Japanese cartoon called Blackjack, and that little known Japanese cartoon called Blackjack has an even less known kind of recreation called Frankenfran, and every episode of Frankenfran is a weird medical mystery problem that someone has, and Fran is a surgeon who solves it in the worst, most body horrific way. And there's one character who wants to look like anime. She's like an actor or something, a Japanese actor. And Fran's like, okay, we can make your eyes bigger, we can make your chin smaller, to the point at which she like replaces her jaw with a piece of plastic and like she becomes this horrific anime cutesy monster. And at some point she wants to go too far and basically like melts into plastic goo. So don't be like Alita, kids.
I'm sure it's been pointed out before, but Christoph Waltz was previously in a movie by Tim Burton called Big Eyes, in which he pretends to be an artist that creates portraits of girls with big eyes. And
that's the waif guy, right? The cute waifs?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's actually his wife or something?
Yes.
Is that... Okay, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that was the premise of it, based on a true story about a true phenomenon. But it's just like, what if it turned out that it wasn't actually Ito that created Alita, but it was his assistant?
That would be quite the twist. Man, Christoph Waltz has gotten some cool roles, huh?
He has been also amazing on his publicity tour, because he's just been sort of trolling everybody that he talks to.
How so?
So, you know, they'll ask him questions on interviews, like, so tell me about your character, and he'll say, well, you should really just watch the movie. Or, so, do you ever get used to seeing yourself on the big screen? Yes, I do. But it must be different, like, being on set versus seeing it with all of the completed special effects, and, like, no, it's not.
It isn't, no.
Also,
it's almost as weird as trying to get an interview from, who's the actor? Jim Carrey.
Yeah. I mean, at least he didn't, like, confess to what Liam Neeson did.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd admit that, but...
Yeah, another thing was they were doing a promotion in Japan where they had this virtual idol set up, like, as a... For whatever reason, you know, how they have the actors and producer and director up on stage with this, like, Hatsune Miku character that's just on a screen, and he proceeds to, like, flirt with her, which...
What?
Yeah.
Wait, who is it a character of? Just, like, a random anime character avatar or something? Or is it related to Battle Angel Alita?
It was not related to Alita. I'm sure it was, like, an existing idol... virtual idol or something. He's, of course, just talking about, like, so are you single? We should make a movie together.
Christopher Waltz, like, weirdly flirting with an avatar sounds like such a good thing. I'm happy I live in a world where that exists.
Yes. I mean, another thing that they did for promotion was they actually found a girl who had new arms and gave her robot arms, so that was, you know, good on them for that.
That is cool. Also strange. Like, hey, we're already in the cyberpunk world, kids. Have some robot arms.
I guess so.
So I heard that the original mangaka actually did some of the promotional art.
Yeah.
Kishiro.
Yeah, Yukito Kishiro.
And that actually looks pretty cool, because he did some, like, somewhat humanoid, like, realistic-looking art of Alita using the suit that she gets in the movie versus what she has in the manga. So that was kind of neat, having it come full circle. And I also saw, like, some snippets of an interview. It seems like all Japanese mangaka are, like, recluses, and it's impossible to know what goes on in their heads. There was something like, yeah, you know, once I started seeing it, I felt like, wow, thank you so much for making this exist. This is, I couldn't have done this myself. This is really part of the world I wanted to see. So there's been some stuff in the past. I'm just thinking of Ursula K. Le Guin not being happy with the anime adaptation of Tales of Earthsea. It's nice that Yukito Kishiro liked how this came out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not always the end-all, be-all sort of indication that something's great, because, you know, the people that made Death Note were also super into the Netflix adaptation, but it's
yeah,
also...
And as I say, and yeah, and on the flip side, Rumiko Takahashi despised Beautiful Dreamers, so, I mean...
Yeah.
Wasn't the creator of Sailor Moon not super happy with some of the anime adaptation?
That wouldn't surprise me.
That's possible. That might be why Crystal is terrible.
I was gonna say too. Yeah, I imagine the thing she probably didn't like about the original anime was that there wasn't enough body horror in it.
Wait, how is Crystal different? Isn't it shot for shot the same?
Well, it's shot for shot the same as the manga, whereas the anime takes some liberties. The original anime takes some liberties.
I see.
Mostly the fact that they slowed the pacing down a bit, which normally that might not be a good thing. You know, in some cases it wasn't, but Having read a couple of volumes of the original Sailor Moon manga, I can tell you that it's actually kind of hard to follow because things happen so fast, and the panel layout leaves a little bit to be desired sometimes. The anime adaptation of that, I thought, was actually improved quite a bit on the source material.
Yeah, I'm just, like, going through my mental list, like, Akira Toriyama was pissed off by Dragon Ball Evolution, and I don't blame him.
Oh, yeah, that one's I think you'd have to be crazy to not look at that and feel like that was an insult to your, a personal insult, practically.
Yeah, and Mamoru Oshii did like the live-action Ghost in the Shell, but keep in mind, Mamoru Oshii is also a crazy person and says that it's good if movies put you to sleep, so...
Well...
I was gonna say we're talking about the director of Angel's Egg here, so
yeah,
which I actually did see that semi recently. That was it's a movie. I mean, it was very nicely animated. Did some biblical references. It's all right. It did incredible, groundbreaking, mind altering, whatever. Maybe a bit, not quite. But it's good. It's a good movie. It's enjoyable.
Why is that out of print and the Americanization is getting a Blu-ray? That's what I want to know.
Angel's Egg was a manga?
No, it was an OVA.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, can you guys who have actually seen the live-action adaptation of Ghost in the Shell, I guess earlier you were saying that it had the same style but not the same tone, and that's what made it suck? Or wasn't as good and true to the source material. How is this different? How did this not fall into the same trap? That's what I'm sort of curious about. Because I still haven't seen that, and I'm afraid to.
So, we were talking about how there's a number of scenes in Alita that are very close to shot for shot with what the source material was. But it doesn't feel like that was the primary goal. I think the primary goal was to communicate the story.
Yeah, because Alita comes of age, starts out sheltered, wants to be her own person. It's like, Ido wants her to be his doll daughter surrogate, and she has these, like, weird urgings to be a warrior and to go out and do her thing. And was that, not the case in Ghost in the Shell? Were they not trying to do bizarre, strange, incomprehensible philosophical things?
They basically didn't even get lip service.
Yeah, I mean, it's also the thing of, like, Ghost in the Shell is basically, like, and let's be real here. So there's a couple of issues here. First of all, they are, with Battle Angel, they looked at the manga and the anime together, and they created something new from that. With Ghost in the Shell, they only looked at the one anime adaptation, and they used that as a springboard. And that one anime, again, being Mamoru Oshii, is really artsy-fartsy to begin with, which is not good for, like, a big blockbuster, But then what they did with it is they recreate all of those iconic visuals, like, perfectly.
Jumping out a window and turning invisible and fighting a spider tank or what?
Yeah, exactly. Body with all of the flakes coming off, or the fight in the shallow like pool of water, things like that.
Yeah,
anything you go through Ghost in the Shell and think like, what are the iconic shots from that? All of those perfect representations. But when it comes to what you're supposed to take away from scenes, it seems like a lot of the time it's like the characters don't have empathy when they're supposed to have empathy, or it comes across as like weirdly technophobic at times, and like the people that the characters that would be heroes in one version would be villains in another. That's sort of like everything is like topsy-turvy, exactly the opposite of where it would be. So I mean, if Battle Angel had been about like, it turns out that Ito was actually the one that wiped Alita's mind so he could just keep her all to himself or something like that. Like
they like somehow inverted his purpose and made it creepy and weird and wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the sort of stuff that happens in that Ghost in the Shell movie that like, I think that's a what a lot of the backlash is about, you know, aside from casting.
He actually found a full human body and just turned her into like a weird robo cripple to make her dependent on him. And he accidentally just gave her, you know, awesome fighting cyborg parts.
Yes.
Incidentally.
And there have been all sorts of terrible localization jobs where they try to westernize things in order to make them more palatable, and you wind up with weird things like that. And thankfully, this is a case, again, where you have James Cameron and probably to some extent Robert Rodriguez. I don't know exactly what the relationship was like on this production.
Ooh, I do. I read the interview. They worked together super well on it. They basically co-wrote it and would go back and forth on like every piece of it. So there was a lot of cooperation. I'll send you the link if you'd like.
Cool. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. That, I mean, Cameron is the big name there. That, you know, Rodriguez is the guy that gets movies done relatively cheaply, but Cameron is the guy that is the visionary, all of the big effects type of stuff, and he's the one that made Fox a gazillion dollars, and because of that, Fox couldn't really, you know, step in that much with this and tinker with it. And he's also a huge nerd, so he's not somebody that's just, you know, doing this as a work for hire or like, oh yeah, whatever. This is a paycheck or whatever. You know, this as opposed to, you know, and I'm a little bit afraid of when Disney owns Fox, if that relationship will continue. I think that it will, just because Cameron is, again, such a big moneymaker.
Yep.
That Disney is also very controlling of things, and there's a reason why the Marvel and the Star Wars movies are, they're focus tested to oblivion.
Well, I would think that he probably, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him too much crap if he didn't just walk. I mean, he's James Cameron. He doesn't need to make another cent in his life. You know what I mean?
And he's got these Avatar projects going on also.
Are they making more of those?
Yeah. I mean, that's why he didn't actually direct this himself, as he's so involved in Avatar 2 right now.
Well, I'm happy Guillermo del Toro handed this to him, and then, like, Robert Rodriguez asked to direct it. Like, it's like, oh, wow! He's three super awesome people!
I'm wondering, actually, with Cameron again, if, you know, we have this whole edition of that scene where there's a downed spaceship in a lake and she has to go underwater to go recover this berserker body for herself. I'm wondering how much of that was Cameron just being like, you know, I like shooting movies underwater.
We're going to have and now for the big underwater scene.
Yep. Well, it was cool. She walked good.
Mm-hmm.
I was also trying to rationalize at the time, like, why doesn't she need to breathe so much? Oh, because, like, probably her brain is the only part of her that actually needs oxygen. The rest of her doesn't. So, yeah, one breath would probably do it.
That makes sense. I mean, she's got two different types of blood in her, so I don't know how that works.
She got that motor oil and that whatever they put in your windshield wiper fluid. Yeah, there you go.
I'm assuming you've heard the joke about them changing the name order in the title to reflect the quote T and A pattern with James Cameron movies.
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, so the movie is titled Alita Battle Angel instead of Battle Angel Alita, and that's just because of Cameron's filmography. The joke is that he makes T and A movies, which is Terminator, Aliens, Abyss, Terminator 2, True Lies, Titanic, Avatar. So
it had to start with a T or an A. I gotcha. Yes,
exactly.
I'm guessing they did that also for, like, alphabetization purposes. It's nice to have something that starts with an AL. It's first on a lot of shelves.
Yeah. I do wonder if they make a sequel, if it will then be Alita something else, instead of, because it's right now Alita : Battle Angel. Mm-hmm. So would it be Alita : Battle for Zalin, or who knows?
Yeah, that is a mystery.
I mean, I don't know if this did quite well enough to get that big name recognition. I am a little frustrated with every anime fan that I've talked to that was like, I don't know, I'm not interested in this. So
gotta have hope. this is one of the cool things. It's not like Dragon Ball Z, where people have expectations or are familiar with it. This is like, it's so unknown or like so relatively obscure that like it has a chance to have like a real honest adaptation. I didn't feel like there was any hype for it to live up to in like the casual person's eye, so it actually had a chance of like exceeding that. I was like really optimistic, and I'm always like retro anime Facebook groups. People are like posting all these comparison shots. It's like, guys, this could be it. This could be the thing. And I feel like that paid off. I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I'm also easy to please. There are parts that I probably would have maybe wanted to do differently, but by and large, like, this is, you know, live action adaptations get a lot of crap. And I understand why a lot of the time, but don't take it as a rule that none of them are worth watching. And even the bad ones usually have something redeemable in them. But this is like more good than bad. And yeah,
this was a labor of love.
Yeah, by a long shot. So the tendency to look for patterns and to cynically go like, oh well, Death Note wasn't good, ergo Americans just can't make anime adaptations. Like, no, that's look at the people who are doing any given project and why they're doing them. And I think that that's always going to be a key when making your decisions about what to check out. And then also watch old OVAs because they're delightful.
They are, except for MD Geist. That one's not delightful.